From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The invasion of the iPods is radically changing the way Americans capture and listen to music. Now, a new wave is subscribing to satellite radio, an even newer wave is downloading music to cell phones. On-demand media that allow Americans to listen to what they like, when they like, are soaring in popularity, and broadcast radio music stations are feeling the heat. Tonight on Point, the future of music and radio in the digital age. But first tonight, we go to London, where commuters may be breathing a little easier after a day of dramatic raids in residential neighborhoods and an arrest in Rome. Police now reportedly have all four of the men who attempted to set off bombs in London's subway and bus system last Thursday. Rob Watson is defense and security correspondent for the BBC. I asked him what Scotland Yard is saying about the day's events.
In public, they're being a tiny bit cautious, but essentially what the BBC has learned is that they have all four suspected failed suicide bombers in custody, and the police have said that this is their best day since the attempted July 21st attacks, and, you know, in many ways it's easy to see why. They had feared that these people could strike again if they weren't caught, and they now have them in custody. And one other thing, Tom, you know, by and large, suicide bombers don't live to tell the tale, but in this case, the British investigators have a real advantage because this time the four men are around and they've got them under arrest.
So these are the four whose bombing attempts 1 week ago and a day failed. They were caught on closed-circuit television. Their faces were captured there. And now they're saying they have all four of those in custody.
That's right, and let me tell you something about the day, because it's been pretty dramatic the way it unfolded. It started off with the BBC and other broadcasters being told to observe a news blackout, which is extremely unusual, and that was because there were a couple of raids underway by armed policemen in the west of London, one in the famous Notting Hill Gate area, people may know that from the movie of that name, and in another part of West London. We were then allowed to start reporting, and what we reported on was dramatic indeed. Indeed, we've seen pictures of the police bursting into an apartment, two rather dazed and confused looking suspects coming out. We have had explosions. That was probably the police using stun grenades. And then if that hadn't been enough drama with all these incredible eyewitness reports and pictures, we then had news from Italy that the fourth suspected bomber had been arrested in Rome.
Rob, a lot of this drama was on American television today, on cable news channels, which had London police having blocked off a street, calling out to an apartment building for Muhammad to come out. Who was in there? Did he come out? Was it one of the four suspects?
Yes, it was. The pictures that people have been seeing in the United States here, and I suspect all around the world, were this raid on a bit of public housing, government housing in West London, where the police had tried to get in. Apparently, according to the police, the suspects had resisted. That's where we think the explosions came in, that some stun grenades had been fired in, something like that. And then the pictures that everyone has seen is these two men coming out onto the balcony, both of them suspected bombers. Really, truly astonishing stuff. And at one point, of course, in one of the rather pokey little apartments, two little children were seen on the balcony as well, all kind of startled by what on earth was going on, a bit like the rest of us, Tom.
The BBC was quoting a neighbor saying that the men in the apartment were shouting out, saying, "How do I know when I come out that you're not going to shoot me? I'm scared." Of course, everyone in London knows about the killing of the innocent man on the subway last Friday.
That is right. That's certainly what eyewitnesses heard. And, you know, frankly, though, Tom, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of sympathy for that. I also heard that one of the suspects shouted out to the police, "I have my rights." Well, I think the kind of mood in London is that they weren't really planning to show the rest of London very many rights when they were planning to explode their bombs last Thursday.
We hear that coming through in your reporting. Rob, is anything new known about the men, their origins, their affiliations?
Well, we already knew that two of the suspected bombers from July 21st were of East African origin. We knew that they'd both come here at an early age as refugees, as children, really, in the early 1990s, one from Eritrea, one from Somalia. The Italian police, who captured the fourth suspect, are saying that the man that they have arrested has a similar kind of background, that he is also a naturalized British citizen of Somali origin.
And what about the big picture now? So they've captured these four who had tried and failed, we're told, to carry off bombings last week. Do they think, fear, that there are other squads of potential bombers out there? And what about those potentially organizing, the so-called sort of mastermind tier?
You raised two big issues there, Tom. Let's take the first one first. Yes, indeed, the police do believe there could be other possible terrorist cells out there. They don't know for sure, but they certainly have a strong fear of that. As for the big picture of the, you know, how do these two plots connect together, who might have been behind it, we still don't have that kind of detail. And security sources have told me that as of yet, there are no direct operational connections, that's the jargon they use, between the July 7th plot and the July 21st. Clearly the men are from different parts of the country, so it would appear the July 7th plotters appear to have come from the north. These people were based in London. But that's not to say that they won't find connections. And also we've got to take into account here possible international links. Certainly as far as the July 7th bombings were concerned, the intelligence services have very much been focusing on Pakistan, where at least a couple of the bombers had visited. But then now that we've found that this second wave of attackers, if you can call them that, had East African origins, even though they'd spent most of their lives in Britain, police haven't ruled out some kind of a connection to that part of the world as well.
But maybe more to be learned from them, and for now Scotland Yard calling this its best day yet in its investigations of the terror attacks in London. Rob Watson, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
Rob Watson is defense and security correspondent at the BBC. He spoke with us from London.
It's Magic Man, and it's Saturday night in Los Angeles. You got the Wolfman Jack Show on your radio. It's a K-Day great weekend, babe. We're going to it tonight.
We go with the top 40 hits in the nation. This week on American Top 40, the best-selling and most played songs from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Canada to Mexico. This is Casey Kasem in Hollywood.
About it is right now at rick.com. Listen, the countdown to number one, and thank you for calling 1-800-RICK-DES. And Debbie Schweiss is listening right now.
He said has entered the building. 50, how are you, man?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. Happy to be here.
Haven't seen you in a minute. Your jewelry's different.
Yeah, man, I changed up a little bit. Went to
now
pick up
the gorilla unit. Let me see the special.
Special ops.
All right, okay.
And there they were. That was Wolfman Jack on KDAY, the king of countdowns, Casey Kasem, Rick Dees with his weekly Top 40, and hip-hop's radio funkmaster Flex with rapper 50 Cent. That may also be the sound of a golden age and last hurrah. We're talking tonight about the future of music and radio, where broadcast radio fits in alongside satellite, downloadable music, and podcasting. You can join the conversation when you're in the mood for music. What do you want from radio now? Or is the soundtrack of your life coming from somewhere else? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Norwalk, Connecticut, is Scott McKenzie, editor-in-chief at Billboard Radio Monitor. Scott, thanks for being with us tonight.
Sure thing.
So we hear all kinds of unease and movement and panic and apprehension in the broadcast radio world. What is going on with radio listenership? Do we see the new technologies, digital downloading and all the rest, really biting into who's listening to music on radio?
I mean, there's no question all of those things are having an impact on traditional radio listening. However, it needs to be balanced against the sheer numbers of radio sets that live in houses and cars all over this country.
So that is an advantage because there's so many radios out there, it's easy to turn on, and people still do it by the millions and millions. But how do you see these new technologies affecting the way broadcast radio is thinking about what kind of music it ought to be broadcasting, when, to whom, how? What's the impact?
Broadcast radio at the moment has really got a wake-up call. It's got challenges on a number of fronts. you mentioned satellite radio, which is a paid service. It's unlike its terrestrial cousin. It costs money. But then you've got the iPod, the on-demand product that provides especially young people with a listening experience that they determine. So what radio's doing is responding sort of in a bunch of different ways. It's relying heavily on a rollout of HD, high-definition radio, which we'll start to see a lot more of later this year.
It's also looking to new formats. We're hearing about Mike and Jack. What are those?
Mike and Jack and Bob and Hank and a bunch of other first names that are being associated with a format of radio that basically reaches into the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, occasionally something in this century, and runs a very, very deep playlist. We're talking up to 1,200 songs that exist on a radio station playlist versus some stations that only run 200 or 300.
And what's the attraction there? Why are people turning to that? Why are stations?
There's a couple of reasons. I mean, the first is that listeners are increasingly saying, at least, that they're getting sick of hearing the same music. The second piece of it is that from an advertising point of view, these Jack formats, as they've become known, are very, very attractive to advertisers. They appeal to an audience that is a high net worth audience.
Scott McKenzie, there's a lot more we want to learn tonight. We've got some other great guests who are going to join us. Please stick with us. We are talking tonight about music and radio at a crossroads, about radio's future in the era of podcasting, satellite, and digital downloads. You can join us tonight. Do you still turn to the radio for your music? Is that so 90s, or really so 60s, so 70s? Do you remember how things were different when radio was the medium for music? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about music and radio at a crossroads, about broadcast radio's future in the era of podcasting, satellite, and digital downloads. You can join us tonight. What kind of music do you turn to radio for now? Music that matters to you, or for background noise to drive by? And what role do you see for radio in music in this century? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined right now by Scott McKenzie, editor-in-chief at Billboard Radio Monitor. Scott, can you tell us what is most popular right now? What genre is most popular right across the board? Is it still top 10? And if it is, doesn't that mean radio can still just keep playing top 10?
Demographically, it splits up a little bit. Certainly the top 10, the top 40 format retains the big listenership out there, and it's very appealing, obviously, to advertisers as well. But you're seeing with the younger people, they're very much listening to music that jumps across a number of genres, from top 40 to R&B hip-hop to, sort of modern and active rock. So there is some fracturing of traditional listening habits.
Do you have a sense of whether people, I guess young people in particular, are listening to the same mix of music on their iPods that they've downloaded as they do on the radio? Or are these two different, corrals full?
There's certainly correlation. And if you look at download numbers, and that's legal and illegal downloads that I'm talking about, you'll see similar artists popping up, not necessarily in the same order as the airplay charts that we carry, but there is a commonality through the artists, yes.
And talk to us about payola. Elliot Spitzer, of course, announced this week that he settled payola allegations with Sony BMG Music Entertainment. That must have rocked your world. I mean, you track these things. Are all the songs at the top of the list that you compiled there because someone has paid DJs or broadcasting companies to put them there?
No, they're not there because they've been paid directly for them to be there. They're certainly helped in some instances, though, in where they've ended up. We're talking, even if you look at the charts today, artists that are solid core artists that have been there again and again. Mariah Carey is there at the moment as number one across a couple of different charts. Now, she's an artist that's been around for a long time, but the allegations that we saw come out of Mr. Spitzer's office this week and the response from Sony BMG with a $10 million fine paid really was a glimpse into the world where there are things like paid spins, where advertisement time is bought basically to run some of these songs to help push them up the charts.
And up they go, leaving everybody wondering why the song's there, if it's really popular or if it's sitting on a pile of cash. Scott McKenzie at Billboard Radio Monitor, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
Sure, thanks.
We're talking tonight about music and radio at a crossroads. You can no doubt see it and hear it. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined right now from Washington by Christopher Sterling. He's professor of media and public affairs at George Washington University, editor of the Encyclopedia of Radio, author of a forthcoming book about FM broadcasting in America. Christopher Sterling, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
And with us from Los Angeles, Jeffrey Pollack, chairman and CEO of Pollack Media Group. He consults with the music and radio industries. Jeffrey Pollack, thank you for joining us.
A pleasure.
Jeffrey, to you first, if I may, describe the kind of earthquake going on here and how much attention it's getting in those, you know, the corner offices where you do consulting. Are broadcast radio people jumping out the windows about what the future holds for broadcasting music?
Well, as long as they're on the second floor, I think they're okay.
Right.
But there's no question that it's a unbelievably competitive environment at this point. And there's internet radio, satellite radio. There is music, you know, at Yahoo and AOL. And if you're not paying attention to the entire competitive landscape, then you're going to have a lot of trouble in terms of being able to plan your future.
Scott McKenzie was pointing out, though, that there are just millions and millions and millions of plain old radios sitting in homes and cars. Does that guarantee broadcast radio listenership for the tunes that it plays for decades and decades, or have we got a tsunami of technology coming that's going to topple that?
Well, terrestrial radio is in still great shape. 95% of Americans listen to terrestrial radio every week. So the problem is not the reach. The problem really has been how long people are spending with their stations. And we shouldn't be surprised if, you know, between iPods and just playing CDs in your car, it's, you know, the amount of time people are spending with radio demands new creativity. It demands a whole new attitude about how to make compelling and urgent radio.
Christopher Sterling, radio has been kind of the national hearth, or was, for most of the 20th century. What's the arc you see us on here? Do you see that changing?
Well, I think the people you've talked to so far are absolutely right. Yes, it will change. But I think the key thing to get across tonight is it will change slowly, and radio broadcasting is not about to go away. There's a difference between dealing with a technology tsunami and dealing with what really matters to people, which isn't so much technology, although convenience surely is important, mm-hmm. as content. And radio broadcasters know more about audio content than almost anybody else.
So we're looking at music in particular tonight. The radio's taken an awful lot of criticism, though, Christopher Sterling, over exactly what they've played. People saying they threw music into a straitjacket, they force-fed everybody the same songs over and over again, they shot themselves in the foot by sort of scraping away the enormous diversity of musical output.
I think there's some truth in that. That plus increasing the amount of number of commercials they were carrying, that has driven a lot of people to satellite services, for example. I think radio did get somewhat complacent. There's been huge consolidation in the industry over the past decade. There's been consolidation on the music side as well. That clearly has had an effect. Some people call it the corporatization of American radio, not that it wasn't corporate all along.
Yeah. Jeffrey Pollack, what about the top 10, the top 40? We were talking a little bit with Scott McKenzie earlier about these new formats, Mike and Jack and Bob and Hank, that dig a lot deeper into the archives of American music. Do you see that becoming the mainstream, or will that always be kind of a side dish, or the top 10, top 40 going to continue to dominate?
Well, there's never been a time where hearing the most popular songs isn't usually the most popular format among young adults. I mean, hip-hop is the mainstream pop in America, and you know, the fact that people are digging deeper in these gold-based stations. I mean, Jack is a format that has been on a little more than a year in the U.S. It came from Canada, and there's been a lot of big success stories. You know, it's really a new version of oldies, but it skews a little bit younger, and that's why the stations are doing it, because 2554 is where most of the ad buys are made in America. So that's why this format is so desirable. You know, people are feeling the pinch of being overly tight at this point, and a lot of formats have decided to expand their playlist, gold in particular.
Gold, you know, meaning what?
Library music.
I see.
Know, in other words, playing you know, a wider list of you know, whether it's 70s, 80s, or 90s records. But the interesting thing to think about is, as radio has evolved, is that radio's diversity has come not from a playlist on one station, but from the amount of stations that were available.
Right.
You know, the old days, you would hear every kind of song on one station. Now, with, you know, 95 stations in Los Angeles to listen to, the diversity comes from your choice. The average person listens to three or four stations per week, or even more.
So you know where you want to go to find what you want to hear. Tell us a little bit more about these Mike and Jack and so on. There's no live DJ in the station with these. It's all prepackaged afar and shipped digitally.
Yes, and the creativity, quote unquote, on these comes from the pre-produced production that drops between the records. Again, there is a situation where it looks like everyone's found the panacea at this point, but we'll have to see. It's been a little bit over a year. It's had some amazing successes. We'll have to really study it 18 months from now and see if it's really has some legs.
We're talking about music and radio and where they go from here. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255, and John is calling from Fort Lee, New Jersey. Hi, John. What do you think?
How you doing?
We're good.
I'm just calling to say I'm a college student right now, just finished my sophomore year. And basically, our generation, what I've seen for myself and friends, is we've grown up with a couple hundred channels on TV and a lot of radio. And basically, that we demand, like, instant gratification, basically.
Are you getting it from radio?
Well, the problem is with TV, whenever we've been trained since we started using that remote, that we've never had a day without a remote or without, you know, the movie channels, without those kinds of things. So we basically are trained since we started using technology to steer away from commercialism and whatnot.
So what does that mean for broadcast radio and music on broadcast radio?
Well,
are you willing to put up with it or not?
Broadcast radio, they must adapt in the sense that especially college kids just go out and find exactly what they want very easily. It's easy, just as easy to download your favorite song off the computer than, you know, turning on the radio and tape recording it, say, that they used to do. But definitely that radio must adapt in the future if it wants to maintain the current audience now of the younger college generation that is going to be the adult listening audience in the next decade or so.
But John, how does it adapt for you? If you're accustomed to pulling down exactly the songs you want, putting them on your iPod, putting it on shuffle, and they come up randomly, how is it ever going to, you know, what broadcast radio station can give you exactly what you personally would have downloaded?
Well, luckily I don't work in the marketing department of broadcast radio. That's not up for me to figure out. But basically, we as college students just find exactly what we want. And if somehow radio could harness that effect, maybe, figure out some way to diversify their selection or just have more than what the current trend media offers, you know?
Yeah.
More of a less commercialized. I don't know if that's possible, but
we got it. Let's see what we can learn, John. Thanks for calling, Christopher Sterling. That sounds like the challenge in the nutshell. John is going to be soon in the heart of that 25 to 54 demographic that they're so worried about, and he's used to having exactly what he wants, exactly when he wants it. How can broadcast radio give him that?
Well, they're well aware of the problem. And one of the things that broadcasting is doing at the moment, radio broadcasters having awakened finally to a lot of what is going on, a number of the major owners are trimming the number of advertisements. They're actually cutting the commercial load down a bit.
And charging more for each minute that remains? Is that how
more music, less talk, and particularly less commercial talk. And that aims directly at the comment that the person from Fort Lee just made. I think another thing that radio pushes very heavily, and some do it well and some don't, and that's localism. That's a flag they run up the pole periodically. And by that I mean talk, news, other ways of reflecting the community they're in.
Yep.
This is the kind of thing the FCC has always wanted stations to do, even way back in the 30s and 40s. And when radio is pressured, that's what they fall back on. We're local. Satellite radio isn't. Other things are not. And yet, I listened to the discussion about Jack and the other formats. It's prepackaged. It's coming from other places. It's not local.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see if it does have legs.
Jeff Pollock, how about that? I mean, can music go local? There was a time we heard at the top of this hour, Wolfman Jack. He was the sound, the voice of a particular station identified with a particular geographic place. Does that mean anything anymore when it comes to music?
Well, the best stations in America still reflect their market. The ones that are real winners are the ones that have that local and regional feel that completely embrace the culture of the city. The personalities do. They talk about what's important, where they've been. Musically, there are breakout bands that come out of the South and come out of the Northwest. There's no question, however, that the music scene is more homogenized based on the fact that the information flow is such that there aren't too many secrets anymore. You know, if somebody discovers a Dave Matthews Band in the South, people hear about it in a hurry.
And what about that kind of, you say the best stations are those that embrace that sort of a very local sense of culture. I mean, how many of those are there in the country? We have the feeling there are almost none.
No, there are some. I would like to say that they are that there are more than there actually are. I mean, I would like to be able to say that we now have thousands of stations like that. We don't. There are some in every market that when you listen to them, it's undeniable that you're in Colorado or you're in Seattle. And those are the stations that are the best antidote. If people are worried about all these different competitors, then the way to win is to have a great local radio station that honestly reflects and embraces what's happening and is really part and parcel to whatever happens. You know, this is the only way that you can compete today, because otherwise, if you're in a song-for-song battle, somebody's going to play fewer commercials than you, someone's going to have maybe better audio than you, maybe somebody's digital and you're not yet, you know. So it's something that everyone has to really, really concentrate on to be able to be competitive.
But it sounds like just the opposite direction that an awful lot of radio has been going for a long time. Adam's calling from Richland, North Carolina. Hi, Adam, you're on the air.
Hello. By listening to the conversation, my comments and questions kind of morphed a bit. But what I was calling in to speak about was that I deal in the computer professional's career, and I have numerous friends who use iPods and their cell phones and various other devices to play their music. And
how about you, iPod or radio?
I use my cell phone, which has a Palm device in it, and I can have a half a gig of music there. And I use my radio, but I also my in-car radio has an MP3 player, so I burn my own personal collections of music to an actual CD-ROM that contains 300 or 400 songs of my choice.
So you're jerry-rigging the whole system to respond to what you need, sort of integrating radio in your own pile of technology there.
That's true, but what my morphism of my comment has been is that the iPods and the cell phones have not been embraced as a medium to package music to. They should be complementary to radio, whereas through history, our musical companies have embraced the album, the cassette,
right,
the CD. Now we have a digital medium, and they, rather than fighting that, they should be marketing to it.
That's an interesting thought, Adam. Thanks for calling in with it. Christopher Sterling, can you see how that would work? Can technology be a friend of radio instead
of
supplanting?
Absolutely. Again, the key thing that radio offers, that obviously a plain technology cannot, is experience in programming, experience in understanding an audience, experience in focusing down to a specific demographic. And that can cut across technologies. I think that is exactly on point. One of the problems with broadcasting today is the broadcasters are still married to their antennas, if you will. They're married to a technology that, in the case of FM, goes back to 1935. Mm. In the case of AM, goes back to 1920. Mm. They can carry what they know to many of the newer technologies, and some of them are. Mm.
Christopher Sterling in Washington, Jeffrey Pollack in L.A., please stand by. We've got to take a short break here. We're talking tonight about music and radio at a crossroads, about radio's future in the era of podcasting, satellite, and digital downloads. What do you think? Have you already moved on to your iPod, your downloads, your satellite radio? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about music and radio at a crossroads. What do you think? Are you nostalgic for the days when radio was where it was at musically, or are you so done with all that already? Are you into your iPod, your digital download world? We're at 1-800-423-8255, joined tonight by Christopher Sterling at George Washington University, editor of the Encyclopedia of Radio, and from Los Angeles by Jeffrey Pollack, chairman and CEO of Pollack Media Group, an industry consulting group there. Chuck is calling from Boston right now. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, what do you think?
I wanted to call in. I'm actually driving home from my job right now, and I wanted to touch base on a couple things. One is that I think it's pretty clear that the days of sitting around in your homes listening to your radio for the radio show, those days are over. I'm 26 years old. I graduated college about 5 years ago. And what I wanted to touch base on is...
So let me understand what you mean. When you want music at home, you're not going to turn to the radio for it.
Well, I do, but it's usually in like an outdoor barbecuing, not really listening to an environment. Very rarely focused on their radio and what kind of shows are coming through it, except when you're talking about in your car. And when you're driving, and I drive about an hour and 15 minutes each way to work, that is your value time when it comes down to what shows you're listening to. The funny thing is, the reason I wanted to call in is because when I drive to work every day, and I have a professional job, I work in business development, What I listen to and what I value, there's two channels that I listen to constantly. One is 90.9 in the morning for NPR.
Okay.
The other, believe it or not, is actually Howard Stern.
So those are the two you flip between, NPR and Howard Stern.
Absolutely. The good news for me is that Howard Stern's commercials are at least about 10 to 15 minutes long, so I get enough time to tune in and get my news and worldly views from NPR every day. Every night on the way home, it's all NPR.
So what are you going to do when Stern goes to satellite?
I will absolutely get a subscription. Absolutely. I mean, what I value is what I hear that comes across as real. And you mentioned talking about satellite radio as being kind of a pre-programmed package deal. There's no connection in terms of person to person there at all.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about some kind of a value in terms of the music they're delivering, but what I value is are people that I relate to. You know, there's not enough time on your show tonight to even talk about what you may or may not respect about Howard Stern or what you may relate to, and I'm sure there's some people out there listening now that relate to some of the conversations in terms of a real dialogue he has with his employees.
But you're saying for music, you haven't gone to satellite, but when the voice that you value goes to satellite, you'll go with us. And that's an interesting point, Chuck. Thanks for calling in with it. Jeff Pollack, how about that? Maybe the radio's battle will be won or lost not just around music, but around those personalities, even talk that keeps people in the radio broadcast, radio realm. What happens when the talkers start to go to satellite? Do music listeners go with them?
Yes, they do. The people who listen to Howard Stern are huge fans of Howard and often find the music that follows Howard not to be of their liking. And that is not atypical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not atypical that you would find a Stern fan from Boston who also listens to NPR in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is personality hugely important. It's never been more important, and some of the major personalities are going to satellite. So there is it's a critical time for terrestrial broadcasters to find those great personalities that end up driving a radio station's numbers and ratings in such a way that they can compete. Because if all the major personalities suddenly end up going to satellite, there's a huge hole for compelling personalities. And we all know that there are only, 20, 25 great morning shows across the country. There's a lot of them in development, but in terms of really great standout shows, there's just not that many. And that's why the big rush is on to find out, who's going to replace Howard in some markets,
right,
who's going to replace some other personalities.
Let me ask you, though, on the music front, if personalities are so powerful, you see clubs all over the country where people pay hard cash to go in and listen to the playlist of a particular DJ, the way he talks between songs, what he
right.
plays. Why isn't that kind of DJ being broadcast instead of just in the clubs?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we're going to start seeing is a lot of experimentation, and non-traditional jocks will end up on the air because they're going to have to go to comedy clubs. They're going to have to find people like the gentleman who just called who, if he doesn't follow Howard to satellite, how are you going to keep him satisfied? You're going to have to find some people who are entertaining enough that transcend the music. Because, again, as we talked before, in a song-for-song battle, anybody can play fewer commercials. What's going to keep you on a station? What's going to establish loyalty? It is generally a killer morning show.
Let's get a call. Charles is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
We're good. What do you think?
Fascinating show. Here's my two cents. We just recently in Madison got a radio station that is called Charlie. That's not one
named after you.
but they play everything from the Archies to ZZ Top.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's anything that hit the top 20. You could hear ZZ Top and the Archies in two songs in a row.
So this is in the Mike, Jack, Bob, Hank vein.
No, this is an actual radio station in Madison, and it's great.
Oh, I see. They're doing their own thing there.
Yeah, and, when's the last time you heard the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald and then, Bob Seger right after each other? But one of the other things I wanted to say is we actually have one station in this town that is not corporate-owned, it's privately owned, and they play a lot of great music that you never hear on corporate radio.
So,
and, for instance, there's a band out there now called The Red Walls, and they're awesome, and I have not heard another station in this town play this band, and they're a phenomenal band, and it's just unfortunate that because there's a set list of
bands
that have to be played, we don't... the public doesn't get to hear.
So let me ask you, Charles, if a station like that is inventive and imaginative enough with their playlist and brings a variety you don't hear elsewhere, is that going to keep you on the broadcast side of the dividing line, or are you still going to end up with your iPod and your iTunes?
And here's the other thing, Tom, is, I have iTunes and an iPod, and I've already spent probably $80 downloading...
Yep.
Downloading songs mm-hmm. off of the Apple website from songs I want to hear. So, I'm hooked into that.
You got a foot in both worlds.
Yeah, but I would really love for the broadcasters to, or at least the independent ones, to have a little bit more,
It's so easy to use it and so fulfilling when they deliver. Charles, thanks for calling. Christopher Sterling, what do you think? Is radio going to be up to this? We've just got a couple minutes left here. If you look out 5 or 10 or 15 years, do you see broadcast radio cutting it? Or do all these others come in? You've watched radio for a long time. Now, do these other technologies come in and just nibble until broadcast just isn't the place people go for music at all anymore?
Tom, there's no question radio is going to change, but it's one of the most competitive media, always has been. Its death knell was sounded when television came along. Its death knell was sounded when other technologies have come along. We've got a lot of things happening at once. There's a digital revolution going on in life as well as in audio. Yes, I think radio is going to survive. I think radio, probably HD, high-definition mm-hmm. radio, it's a move they're going to have to make. But I think high-definition radio will survive. I'll bet if we have this conversation in 10 years, there'll be radio stations around, particularly in college towns like Madison. I grew up in Madison, so it's fun
great
to hear
town.
A call from there.
Yeah.
And partly because it is a college town and an interesting mixture of people is probably one of the reasons a station can take the kind of risk it has taken to create the sort of programming Charles just talked about.
Jeffrey Pollack, what's your prognosis? Look out a decade for us. What's broadcast radio? How's it going to intersect with music?
Well, broadcast radio, as the gentleman just mentioned, is had a number of competitors that have been declared to end commercial radio as we know it. And I think commercial radio is fine as long as it is seen as a necessary part of the digital future. So radio with an iPod, with MP3s, is fine. You know, radio does not need to be the sole source of music or personality. It just has to be one of the key parts of it. And I think that the gauntlet has been thrown down in terms of being that radio needs to be very creative. It needs to dig deep and to realize that the market has changed a lot. So being compelling and having a sense of urgency is what's really required. But I think terrestrial radio will rise to the challenge like it's done many times before, and in 10 years, it will be extremely healthy.
Well, here's hoping they do all that. It's a lot of fun to listen, knowing that a lot of others are listening at the same time when it's good. Jeffrey Pollack at Pollack Media Group in L.A., thanks a lot for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Christopher Sterling, professor of media and public affairs at George Washington University, editor of the Encyclopedia of Radio. Christopher, thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org, click on forums. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to some of the sounds of this past week.
I believe the president's policy should be modified. We should expand federal funding and the accompanying NIH oversight and current guidelines governing stem cell research.
It was a missed opportunity on CAFTA. It was really very sad. It was a setback for workers in Central America, and it is a job killer in the U.S.
It is unfortunate that the Democrat leadership don't see this as good for the country. They see it as good for their politics.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff of Space Shuttle Discovery.
We know that the folks back on the planet Earth are just feeling great right now, and our thanks to everybody for all the super work that's been done over the past 2.5 years to get us flying again.
If the political process continues to go positively, and if the development of the security forces continues to go as it is going, I do believe we'll still be able to take some fairly substantial reductions after these elections in the spring and summer next year.
Targeting civilian life and property through suicide bombings or any other method of attacks is haram, prohibited in Islam. And those who commit these barbaric acts are criminals, not martyrs.
Today's decision by the IRA to move into a new peaceful mode is historic and represents a courageous and confident initiative.
Sweeney dumps millions into the Democratic Party. Obviously, it's not working. Let's dump millions into organizing new members. We'll gain our political strength faster that way.
And there's a week. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist breaks with President Bush and throws his support behind legislation to loosen restrictions on embryonic stem cell research. The House passes the Central American Free Trade Agreement. The Space Shuttle Discovery blasts off, NASA's first launch since the Columbia disaster 2 years ago. General George Casey, the top U.S. military commander in Iraq, suggests a substantial withdrawal of U.S. troops could begin by next spring, if... American Muslim leaders issue a fatwa against suicide terrorism. The Irish Republican Army announces it will disarm after more than three decades of violence. And three of the country's largest labor unions, the Teamsters, the United Food and Commercial Workers, and the Service Workers Union, bolt the AFL-CIO. A lot of unbolting there, Jack, this week.
Yes, we don't know where that's going to go. We had Andy Stern on our show, and he made a very passionate presentation that what labor was doing wasn't working. They have to do something else. Whether this is the something else that'll make a difference, one doesn't know. But the fact is that we're now with labor unions where we were about 8% of the private sector workforce around 1920. And that's not good for American workers, even for people who don't belong to labor unions, because, of course, the union wage puts an upward pressure on all wages.
Jack, what else catches your eye this week?
Well, the IRA in Ireland, my gosh, I mean, Gerry Adams, we just quoted, said it ends 30 years of history. Really, it may end 75 and 80 years of history when the Irish troubles were in their earlier phase. You know, these two communities, the Catholic community of the North and the Anglo-Irish or Protestant community, they have been caught in a cycle of history and of hatred that has hurt them all. I remember reporting there years ago and talking to a Protestant politician, and he said, you know, you can tell the Catholics. And I said, how can you tell them? He said, by their red hair. I said, wait a minute, this country's full of red-haired people. but Catholic red hair is different. And that was the world of segregation and prejudice, and the Catholic civil rights movement, which started in the 1960s, based on Dr. Martin Luther King. They had banners of Dr. Martin Luther King, and it looked as if there was going to be change within the British state, that the Stormont government in Ulster was going to be actually allow Catholics to participate. And then Bloody Sunday came, British troops shooting down demonstrators, and then the men with the gun, the IRA, came in, and then the men with the gun on the other side came in. And finally, the guns are going to be put down, or at least they say they're going to be put down. And, you know, Yeats, writing years ago when this was just starting, he said, really, we have fed the heart on hatred. The heart's grown brutal from the fare. And lots of hearts grow, you know, that happened to lots of hearts in Ireland, and now maybe they can begin to heal.
Lots of reasons for hope there. A lot of effort has been put into that healing. But I also couldn't help wondering this week, Jack, if with the bombings in London, that the IRA just couldn't be comfortable sitting on the same seat in the bus as Islamist terrorists. I mean, as long as you haven't put the gun down these days, as long as you haven't put violence down, you're kind of in the same slot as the people putting off bombs in the subway.
You're absolutely right. I think September 11th, in that way, has vectored into the Irish situation and possibly for the good. This is going to require a tremendous act of faith on the part of the Protestant majority. They don't feel like a majority. Mm-hmm. They feel like, you know, that they're ready to be swallowed up by the Republic at any moment. But it also may mean an end to the Republic talk. This is a state, part of the British state, Ulster is. That's the way reality is. And the Republicans who want to annex it to the Republic to the south have got to give that up with the gun.
Well, I'm going to go into this weekend hearing the voice of the astronaut we heard there on the Space Shuttle Discovery talking about folks back on planet Earth. Puts us in our place. Here we are down on our little blue ball.
Spinning away.
Spinning away. Jack, have a great weekend.
And to you too, Tom.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Michael Garth, Matt Lieber, Mary Moore, Persephone Meal, and Angel Coselli. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.